Now, I don't know if there have been questions on the remainder of that subgroup, so we can move on to subgroup 9 if you like.
Okay, fantastic. So, this is subgroup relating to Fernhill and Sunshine Coast?
Bay.
Bay, right, I think it's the bye-bye.
Such that it were, isn't it?
Suddenly we jumped internationally over to Australia. Anyway, the first commission there is Sean and Jane McCart, number 391.
I don't have a question for you, Ms. Devlin. But I just wondered with your analysis in paragraph 37.8, which is on top of page 115 in section 42A report. And I know it's not in Fernhill or Sunshine Bay, but this is where the question is. I just wondered if your analysis that the land was generally not close enough to the town centre is consistent with your recommendation concerning the council's land in Vancouver Place.
My response to the council's submission was that there was already a notified zone. It had been HDR some time. I don't know when exactly that went in, and on a map it does look a little unusual to have that previous HDR that became subzone C that's now NDR up there.
So do you think that's the inconsistency rather than the other way around? Mm-hmm. Is that what you're saying?
That zoning is, when you look at the map, it does seem inconsistent because you've got your sort of ring of HDR around the town centre, and you've got Elia, and then up on the hill, perhaps responding to topography and the backdrop behind the Erino neighbours, because it's Queenstown Hill, it became HDR and is now MDR.
Next submission, Mr. Trevor William Oliver, submission 479, section 38 of the 42A report.
Do you have any questions, Commissioner?
No, this is another one of the pattern ones.
Okay, Ready Group Limited, submission 699.
I'm just checking them. The only thing, Mr. T, the only one I remember about this was the site visit was how steep it was at the bottom.
Do you have any questions, Commissioner?
No,
I haven't.
Thank you, Commission. Hotel Proprietary Limited, Landina Holdings Limited, and Shelmut Proprietary Limited, Commission 97.
Yes,
Yes.
But the question would be just Edwin, in your section 42A report, your opinion seems to be based on Mr. Glasson's evidence about being unsuitable for FW3 firefighting demand. Is there any reason to say no to a medium density residential zoning on this land?
When I first approached a lot of these upzoning submissions, I didn't sort of look too much into the what might be in between. I tended to just go through and go, you've asked me, is it the right zone there? I've said, spot zone would be the NDR or HDR, surrounded by LDR would be inappropriate, but I would potentially support NDR rather than HDR. In that spot, I mean, it's not that far away from the rest of the, sort of Fernhill NDR, which has been located along Fernhill Road and public transport and access to the local shopping centre. And I guess in terms of spot zone, it's pretty big.
It's not a small spot, is it? It's more of a block than a spot.
Yeah, that's right. I believe that's the technical term.
Yes,
Yeah, it's pretty large.
And this is currently under built, is it, by the way?
Yes.
Yes, it is, yeah.
There was another site I recall having some quite steep gradient. And these switches are changing that radius. And I think before in your section 42A, with what you're saying, what you've just said, which is that the location wise, it could be NDR or something else, but there were other reasons for saying no. So, to what extent do you rely on firefighting requirements to decide things?
Well,
how do you weigh up the competing things?
Right, okay. So, FW3 is what's required for HDR, so if there was the NDR, it could be quite different and it could be suitable. Mr. Glasner probably, unless they asked for NDR and HDR, I'm trying to remember. Oh, yes, they did, okay. So he may have covered that on the
sheet. Yes, he didn't raise any issues with the NDR.
Right, So that would be fine from infrastructure perspective, and they haven't come in with any submitter evidence for firefighting or anything like that to change Mr. Glasner's mind. Thank you.
Well, you do talk about the lack of any evidence about effect on amenities, which is probably addressed with surrounding LDR. That's probably principally in relation to HDR, but would it also apply to MDR?
Not as much, no, because you've got slight increase in height, you've got reduced setbacks, but it's nowhere near what you would potentially get under HDR. I don't know if there are any, like other sites, I don't know if there are some bits of flat in there where you could get your full HDR 12 metres height, but knowing Fernhill, probably not. NDR gives you 8 metres for a sloping site and HDR gives you 7, so although you don't get quite the same amount of capacity, could potentially get a 10 different height.
I suppose at 8 metres, the difference is you can get a second story in.
Yep.
With 7, it's getting a bit of a break.
Thank you. The next subgroup of submissions for 10 relates to Gorge Road. The first submission is Jeff Aldridge, submission 86.
Any questions, Commissioner Corbyn? No questions on that.
Thank you. Submission 70, Westwood Group.
No, this was the one we were confusing with that one, which was only available. It was one of those ask Mr. Heath ones.
Yes.
Thank you. We now turn to a group of submissions. This is under section 44 of the section 42A. The submissions are PR Queenstown Limited, number 102. Niki Patel, 103, Hamish Munro, 104, Barry Sarvinson, 107, and Clyde McIntyre, 108.
Thank you. said submitters request that 30 to 46 Gord Road be rezoned from HDR to business mixed use zone. I recommend that the site should retain the notified HDR zoning primarily due to the close proximity of the site to the town centre and due to the lack of need for additional commercial zoned land. Mr. Heath for QLDC estimates that 50% of commercial zoned land within the Wallachippi ward is vacant or not utilised for commercial activities. I do not consider that the requested BNUZ rezoning and commercial activities that would be enabled would be complementary to the Queenstown Town Centre zone. The site is easily walkable from the edge of the town centre at the council building and through the public car park or along Gorge Road. The rezoning request may undermine the role of the town centre as a primary focus for economic activity and may affect the walkability and compactness of the Queenstown Town Centre zone.
Yes, I want to discuss a bit more about the height limit in HDR and the assessment of them, and in particular, I may have wondered whether you consider that it will be 20 metres under, potentially 20 metres under each of them. I'd like to be really clear about that too. And then
so the HDR enables up to 12 metres on flat.
This is not flat.
Some of it would be possibly flat, but yeah, no, it slopes down towards Horn Creek. And then the BMUZ enables greater height because it's kind of been designed in response to the Gorge Road topography, where you have much taller buildings up against the hills of Gorge Road, the gorge.
When you consider the effect of the 20 metres being in height, did you not consider its effect on the properties that are zoned high density on the eastern side of Gorge Road? I don't recall reading anything about that. I recall reading quite a lot about Horn Creek, isn't it, and the western property.
No, I don't know if I did specifically look at the areas over the other side. I guess I was just sort of generically concerned about that level of potential height in this location. I was thinking about some of the other neighbours in the block. I didn't think too much about the one on the other side of the street because at least they are separated by the road. And then Mr. Vivian put in some extra submitted evidence about height, which I thought was really useful, but it still didn't really allay my confusion about the commercial aspect of that zoning and what it enables. I think he may have put a bit more detail in about the setbacks on the site's being sloping and you may not get all that full height, etc.
His thesis was basically that it's not about the uses of the land, it all comes down to height. And that's how I summarised what he said. Because he pointed out that there would be just as much residential in the being used on above the first floor or above as you would get if you had HDR. So that was his reasoning, that it would all be about height. The assessment that you could have height, the effects of 20 metres height on the land to the west is useful, but the women one to the east, and I just wondering, you said the road is between the properties, but what other factors might be relevant?
Well, I guess my understanding is that, you know, like I was sort of saying before, that zone has been thought up and designed for a particular area and to respond to a particular topography and for the commercial part of it to be in that area so that Gorge Road commercial area is regenerated, I guess, and has the potential for additional height where it can be accommodated. Because if you go further up Gorge Road, a lot of those sites just go from Gorge Road to Queenstown Hill and back onto the reserve, so you've got no neighbours. to sort of apply that zone further down, and I do acknowledge that there is a little bit on the corner of this block as well, but to apply that further down, I don't know that is the right fit for this area. It's been designed for a different area, and particularly with that height. Thank you. Moving on to this point, I should actually just note for all of the remaining submissions that Ms. Devlin covers, Dr. Reid has provided evidence on them, so we will return to that on the 4th of September. But first submission by Ngāi Tahu Tourism Limited, submission 716. Thank you. The submitter seeks that the Morningstar Beach Reserve and Arthur's Point be rezoned from rural to OEP, rural visitor zone, or another visitor zoning. I recommend that the request should be rejected on the basis of development on a scale anticipated by the OEP RBC being incompatible with reserves, conservation, historic heritage, and recreation values. I also do not consider that the submitter has provided evidence to justify that the OEP RBC achieves the strategic objectives of the PDP and fits into the PDP structure, including in relation to district-wide chapters, nor a comprehensive Section 32 assessment of the provisions within the ODP RBZ itself. I consider that there could be some merit in rezoning the southern part of the site surrounding the shot over jet base and other activities to an urban zone if that would promote a more strategic approach to tourism and visitor activities compared with resource consent. The submitter has not provided any details of a possible zoning framework, however, for consideration.
In the original submission made to Tourism Limited, probably 11.325 hectares of land located at Arthur's Point, varies from rural to rural business zone. In my evidence in chief, I oppose the rezoning based on the scale of the development and its associated traffic effects on existing transport infrastructure. In Mr. Farrell's planning evidence on the Farrell's side to tourism, he requested that I consider the proposal with no residential development on site, as it is not intended to develop residential units in the future. In the rural business zone, residential development is a permitted activity. So unless the permitter offers up specific rules to prevent that type of development, additional development would be possible.
Well, I'll start. My understanding of this entire site is a recreation reserve, is that correct?
It's considered as a recreation reserve in about 1992 or something like that. And then there was a consent went through a couple of years ago to subdivide off the areas that Shot Over Jet and Dock have developed, because previously they were all part of the Dock land and they had some long-term leases to do these things. So they've got their own parcels now, although I don't know that any new titles have come out yet. And then as part of that consent, the rest of the reserve was kind of being divided into historic over most of it and then a recreation bit sort of closer to Redfern Terrace.
So, does that mean that the land that Shot Over Jet is on the reserve status will be revoked as part of that?
I guess so, yes, because they're getting, because they will get titles for their land.
So, what is the area of that small portion that's not the 11.3 hectares?
No, that would be the whole thing, yeah.
Is there a plan or something like that that we could see?
That shows just the area.
Or that shows the subdivision that you've just brought.
Page 141 of my Section 42A report.
Oh yes, so that
plan. It was a bit awkwardly copied in because it was on a couple of pages. So the top part is that the Shot Over Jet and Dock sort of area. So Shot Over Jet.
What lot number are they on?
Are they lot 5?
Yes, they're lot 5. Slot 2 is car parking and access. Slot 4 is, I think it's Dart River, but that might be Naitahu as well. And then Lot 3 is the dock workshop or depot.
Right.
And then Lot 1 behind them was going to become, I think I had a historic reserve. And then the next bit down is just the rest of the reserve up behind there. So the rest of Lot 1, a couple of other people's houses in there. And then Lot 6 was going to be called Rec Reserve.
Right. It looks to me like it's about 2 hectares that's roughly adding up lots 2, 4, and 5.
Spotting area. I think I might have even estimated that in my special paper.
And reading the evidence, not that there's evidence from this, it seemed to me to be groping for something that isn't rural, that recognises that this is not a typical rural site. There's a lot more going on there. They just seem a bit trying to horrify that you've done the residential capacities.
Yep, that's right, because we had to have something to...
I know, so have they just simply totally overreached in their requested revenue?
There's just not enough detail.
Yeah. Is there some other way they could have approached it?
I guess if it had been me, I would have narrowed the scope down to that actual area.
Yeah.
And if there was some sort of extension area to it, I would have been more specific about the activities I wanted in there.
Mm-hmm.
So the ODPRD of course enables all sorts of stuff, but what they might have really been wanting was commercial rec activities without structures, but
yeah.
I don't know that.
No.
It could enable hotels. There's this lovely flat that there's the recreation reserve that you can see an enormous hotel there.
But they don't want that either.
I was hoping that a lot more detail would come in the summary, but I guess I've tried to sort of point towards what. That there could be something here, but I'm just not entirely sure what it is.
Not for you or for us to make up the deficiencies.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, those questions are just reminded me of a conversation we had 2 weeks ago. I believe it was in relation to Queenstown Park's submission, so sorry this is a little bit off topic, but it does relate to reserves. There was a question from Mr. Mountford about the Reserves Act and the relevance of a reserve management plan and what that means for the council as the administering body. I just wanted to refer you to section 41 of the Reserves Act, in particular section 41, subsection 11, which states that the administering body shall, in the exercise of its functions, comply with the management plan for the reserve and any amendment thereof. So the, I guess the key word there is comply, which is not something that we really see in the RMA, but that is the relevance in the Reserves Act. I just wanted to clarify that because I don't think I was all that clear.
So say again.
So it's section 41 amendment, that the administering body shall in the exercise of its functions comply with the management plan for the reserve and any amendments thereof.
So that's relevant to the skyline.
Yes, skyline, that's correct, it's a skyline submission.
Thank you. rather begs the question that they also shall comply with cross-referencing with the RMA.
Yes, that's correct. Yes. So that's in Stephen Evans. And the submission by Sam Strang, number 349.
Ms. Devlin, this one, I have here that there are two terraces on this site, and to the east there appears to be a development on the west of the terrace. Is it this FHA or whatever it is? There was a whole lot of work being done with construction, wasn't there? The north?
Would that be in the LDR part of Arthur's
What I see is a lot of housing being enabled on terraces.
Mm-hmm.
So why not here?
Why not on Sam Strang's property? Mainly because it was just one of those sort of spot zoning problems, I suppose. So he's isolated from the rest of the LDR. And if there was some way for his land to be joined up, but he's got the reserve in the way, I'm assuming Sam is a he. So if the submitter's land could sort of connect up somehow, then I don't think I would have a great issue with it. But because it was just sort of sitting on its own, surrounded by reserve, and I think Wendy may have had some concerns about how it would be accessed, but yeah, that's getting into your sort of area, Wendy. I sort of looked at it and I was like, oh, if this little bit above the submitted site could join up with the LDR zone, and if we knew there was a decent way of getting in there for not just the one farmhouse but several houses.
Well, there already seem to be several houses there.
Yeah, well, there's on the Sam Strange place, I think there's only one.
Well, certainly.
But there's a couple of other ones further in the reserve, but they have different driveways. They come off the dock shot of the jet.
Right.
Access way. Okay. And then all the other houses nearby are up on Redfern Terrace, so I'm not even sure if the topography would allow you to go up through here.
Is there any reason, seeing the council seems quite happy to have split zones on 2 feet of property, is there a problem with Dock having a split zone?
Dock haven't submitted or given
any. But if we redrew lines and recommended things, ultimately would there be a problem if the terrace space
was zoned to join up,
was certainly included in the urban growth boundary and zoned to join up, and with a no build provision on it, would that create any problems?
I don't think it would create any problems with me, and provided that Doc were happy that there weren't any sort of fundamental values here, my understanding is that most of the values in this reserve, and I'm certainly not an expert, are down by the river where all the gold mining activities took place.
But isn't Doc's job to preserve those values in respect of the zoning underlying it? I mean, they've chosen not to designate their reserves, that's not our problem.
Yeah.
But irrespective of the zoning, they have to build the reserve, don't they?
Yeah.
And if we zone it all high density residential, they still have to protect the heritage aspects of it.
Yeah.
Wouldn't they?
Yeah. And there could be scope maybe to zone something like that, because the Naitahu submission is for the whole reserve.
Yes.
And it's only the RED.
Yes,
there
is quite a range of something that's coming through.
Yes. And then, yeah, it's similar to the central one, you could have to devote a zone on the is here today.
It's not far from the LBO, is it?
No, it's not far, yep.
If you're coming down the road, it's only a, as perceived from the road, it's only a very short distance.
Yeah, it's not far at all. I'm trying to remember what the bank is. I think your evidence was. I've got in here that you said it could be accommodated by the front access, it's not by Arthur's Point Road. So,
so where would the access be?
Well, I thought that maybe you could go come through Redfern Terrace, but I just wasn't sure about
that. Sorry, remind me, which is Redfern Terrace?
So Redfern's the cul-de-sac up the top there.
It doesn't seem to be. Oh, yeah, that's right.
It was on the road,
too. That's higher up and you've got to come down the bank.
Yeah, so I wasn't sure about that.
That is good.
Then I think, I just sort of made the point an alternative access would have to cross the Morningstar Beach.
So no access to Arthur's Point Road. That's not a good idea.
Well, I don't recommend it based on the is on that tight horizontal curve. Mission is Michael Swan. I understand he's been, this mission has been taken over by Gertrude Stadbury.
Yes.
It's mission 494.
The review of that book runs at the same time. Seems to be the same piece of paper.
Yes, so that's mission 527.
Yes.
Yep. So I think Gertrude Stadbury has taken over the large one. Mission 6. Thank you. I recommend a small part of the site at Arthur's Point should be rezoned from rural to LDR with boundaries based on Dr. Reed's evidence in regard to O&L and landscape effects. I rely on Dr. Reed's evidence in regard to the potentially significant adverse effects of the larger area LDR rezoning sought on the O&L in this location. The submitter seeks that a much larger area be rezoned and has provided transport evidence in regard to upgrading Abbey Road. However, Ms. Banks for QLDC retains her opposition to the rezoning request, with the exception of the small area identified by Dr. Reed. I rely on Ms. Banks' evidence about the rezoning request increasing delays at the Edith Canal Bridge and that the proposed Abbey Road upgrade will not be of sufficient width to safely service the site. The main issues of disagreement between experts are the effects of the rezoning on the O&L and the location of the O&L, and the capacity of transport infrastructure to support the rezoning request.
Larchman Developments requested that 5.8957 hectares of land be rezoned from rural to the LBR in the Arthur's Point area of the Atlee Road. I oppose a submission based on the traffic effects from a potential yield of 89 residential lots enabled in the rezoning. In addition, I have concerns about the road road access to the site, which would require a fairness in the widening extension of the road to serve the subject site. However, there would be a short extent of the road that would not meet the minimum road width requirements of 15 metres, rather it would be widened to 9.5 metres. I have raised concerns in my rebuttal evidence with this pinch point with regards to safety due to limited site visibility and the reduced pedestrian cycle provision. I have considered Dr. Marion Reed's evidence, where she has calculated the reduction in the rezoning to either 8 watts at 800 square metres per lot or 20 lots at 300 square metres per lot. In my view, the reduced size of the rezoning would reduce the risk and the consequence, however, the consequence would be the same. However, I would not oppose the submission with the upgrade of Abbey Road if the number of LBR lots were reduced to 22.
Well, I'll stand up for that. We'll help. Expect you to ask as well. Ms. Banks, please. Have you seen the evidence of the submitters and the information provided in the legal submissions of Mr. Goldsmith about dealing with the principal?
Yes, I have read that. I think with regards to the site visitors, when I read the submitted documents, What I can understand is that nothing, there wasn't anything that addressed the site, so the noise wasn't sure actually clear on what site distance, but whether it was achieved or not. And those documents referred to it being one lane as opposed to this, which was like two lanes.
Yes, I believe it would be fair to say Mr. Goldsmith's legal submissions contain some interesting evidence on the driving wheels. Venture into the same territory. I think his submissions say that 9.5 metres would be the final width of the area that was the
over 18 metres.
Over 18 metres,
yes.
And I think his submission was that there wouldn't be a problem being able to speak from one end to the other.
Yes, and I think, I think we need to do a traffic, only the safety assessment. And whatever his assessment wasn't clear when he was referring to that 5.5, 5.7 metre transitory width. In the Kildee, the subdivision code does refer to the actual length of the road. I think he's saying that it should be narrowed down to just that specific 80 metres, which I don't think that's correct. I think that the width itself, where the Kildee's here recommending the casual width applies to the width of the whole road rather than the narrow point.
The other submission reasons related that I'm interested in is the use of camel bridge and the council's intentions with respect to that. And again, helpfully within that submission from Mr. Goldsmith. But also from the traffic engineer, it seems that the end of Cable Bridge is operating pretty well close to capacity anyway.
Yeah, so I guess it's more accurate and flexible.
And so when you assess this property, did you assess the cumulative effect from other proposals for lead zones in around Mountains Point and the
LJs? Yeah, well, I think
that was a big game changer.
Yeah, I didn't go into too much detail for this. Submission, but I think it's just a fix as it is currently. I think that estimation of the effects that we've had.
So it would be fair for the panel to conclude that if some rezoning was enabled here, that the effects of the traffic on Eden Cable Bridge would have to be added to the effects of traffic from other rezonings and so on in the system.
The East Cable Bridge is on the main route between Arrowtown and Queenstown. It's also the main route from Queenstown to Coronet Peak Ski Field. There are some areas of operative zone, rural visitor zone, and Arthur's Pool, which and there's an SHA being developed in Arthur's Point. Isn't there an actual expected increase in traffic which is going to require dealing with either the Cable Bridge, whether or not this area was rezoned?
Yeah.
Yes. So, in fact, the rezoning of this would not tip the balance.
No.
So if I can pick up on that development capacity for that area. So the council did that latest sort of feasibility assessment and said that the entire Arthur's Point RVZ would yield about 200 lots. And the FHA enables 88 lots or 88 additional lots from Mr. Goldsmith's permission, but anyway, it was already zoned to LDR, which would enable 29 lots. So I don't know if that's the full 88 he's referring to.
But that, those rural visitors are in calculations are really guesses, aren't they? There's no density.
Yeah, they're trying to just sort of look at, the council's trying to look at what's actually being developed, you know, what do people actually do, what have they actually done in Arthur's Point, and sort of apply that across, you know, yeah, rather than potentially what you could do, which is it feasible and is anyone actually going to do that, that crazy evil.
Have you got any sense of the value of property with an Arthur's Point, traditional dwellings?
They're much the same as anywhere else.
They don't differ?
I don't think so. No, you get the old Arthur's Point has amazing views, you know, out across the basin to the mountain. So they're always going to be expensive, and I think the more sort of conventional LDR on the flat stuff is
priced
much like anywhere else as well. I'm not sure what the
SHA
will come out at.
Just what's your suggestion, Ms. Dietland, that the small portion of this land be rezoned LDR that remain to become will remain rural? What do you envisage happening to that rural land?
I haven't really envisaged anything. I guess the landowner will carry on as they are. Potentially they can get rid of some of those well-known conifers.
As the landowner, what land has been doing today for rural lands?
Nothing.
Subdividing it off piece by piece.
Well, they have. Yeah, that's right. They've been chipping away at the bits that are already zoned, I guess, but have had pretty poor access. And of course there was the one coming off Matthias Terrace, so we started off and the submissions didn't give enough detail about where they were coming, where the access was going to be, so we thought of Matthias Terrace because that was the most recent access, and of course they've come through and said they're going to upgrade Abbey Road. But you're right, potentially they will just get sort of another bit.
Well, it raises the question whether, given the discretionary regime, what would be the circumstance that a decision maker would face landowner cleared all the wilding trees and came in with a low density residential development on the rural land, absolutely entirely consistent with the zoned land adjoining it?
How would that go? They would have to go through the ONL matters.
We've got competing evidence on the other.
Yes, we do.
We can't say that Dr. Reeves is the only evidence. So there's two lines, and we haven't come to a conclusion about where that might be. Even if we were to come to one conclusion in the future, those two lines of competing evidence will still exist, won't they?
And if
all the trees were removed, we have to ask Dr. Reed this, of course, but if all the trees were removed and all the houses behind it were visible, that landscape might not be quite so outstanding.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering whether we're just pushing it, rezoning some urban and some rural is creating future issue rather than dealing with it now.
Because of the zoning edge stopping. I would agree with that. And when you're able to ask Marion a bit more about her views, and I'll just basically rely on what she would say about that. And in regard to access, if they can, through their additional evidence, and if they have, Mr. Carr presenting quite a lot of stuff as well, then if that changes Ms. Banks' mind about Abbey Road and being able to serve the houses, etc., then I would be reasonably comfortable with it. When Marion and I first visited the site, I know it creates a nice backdrop for the residents there at the moment, but it's still their southern backdrop. I think if you're going to have more development in that area, I don't think it's going to completely detract from the amenity of that area. I did have some concerns about that, but as submitters have pointed out, it's growing pines. And their views and outlook are off to the north, and you've still got the rest of the OEL that you're going to be looking at. I would just have to rely on Marion and where she would get to with landscape, and if they can satisfy Ms. Banks for accessing it. Knowing that Abbey Road is gravel and narrow and has a steep side, so as long as they can actually physically do those works and upgrade that road as well.
It's a more general question, but it's one that intrigues me, and that is, when you're considering rezoning to residential, in what may or may not end up over now, because we, at the moment it's over now, but it may not be over now. To what extent is it relevant to consider the views of people's homes anyway, and whether or not they can see someone else's house? Do you go down to Point, you're on one side of the river, you can see the houses on the other side.
Yeah,
well,
that's right.
If you're driving along the road, I can understand the council's plan says that views from public roads matter, but they don't. That doesn't mean you can't see anything. It just means the way you, what you see should be done tastefully.
And I agree with that, and I think generally the LDR zoning, I don't think you should have those expectations that you're going to have no neighbours and beautiful views or whatever. You're expected an urban zoning and you're living in that zone. Having said that, they have been running on the expectation that the rest of that site will remain rural.
But what you can do in the rural zone might have a similar effect than it doesn't provide any certainty at all as to what the outcome will be on there.
Yeah, that's right. It's not just going to stay necessarily as it is. And there's the, I don't know if you drove in there and up to the sort of sunny, sort of half finished kind of house. If that didn't have wilding pines around it, that probably had a great view of that up behind the giant edifice.
Thank you. Right, get back to the following up from what Mr. Nugent was talking about. Firstly, with relation to the capacity problems on the bridge and so on, is the council thinking about it? In a wider sense, because obviously there's a problem coming.
Yeah, I believe that's part of the plan, the contract plan.
Are there any specific proposals?
I'm not sure
about
that. I believe that's one of the plans
to
upgrade the bridge.
What are you looking at? An upgrade of the bridge or a replacement?
I'm not sure.
Well, what is possible there? Can you even upgrade that bridge?
I think the bridge is a heritage site.
It is. Yeah. So it's
not just because of this thing.
It's a big, whatever you do, it's a big task. I don't know, 89 knots, if it goes that high, is that going to make such a difference to the existing problem? Is that the straw that breaks the camel's back?
You mean for this submission?
Yeah, for this.
No.
Or conversely, is it the amount of demand that forces the council to do something?
The other thing I'd just like some clarification about is dropping down to the detail of Hadley Road and the pinch point. So it's only about 9 metres wide, isn't it? Or potentially can be made 9 metres wide.
Yes.
That's where it goes into the property, towards the end of Hadley Road.
Yes. Well, that's where the purchase of land is made to enable that widening.
It's
well within the
property. Yeah, so 9 metres, I mean, the topography comes into it and all the rest of it, but 9 metres just generically would be wide enough for two traffic lanes and a footpath, wouldn't it?
Yes, it is.
Mm.
Yeah, but it's not to the council standards.
Not what?
To the council standards.
I can't hear you, sorry.
Not to the council standards in accordance with the subdivision
rules? No.
Yeah.
But do you always rigidly enforce the council standard for a difficult situation like this, for a short distance?
So 18 metres, safety is the main issue for that stretch of road, which I'm not comfortable with.
Mm. But the applicant is, well, the submitter is producing evidence that it's workable.
I think that's mainly based on previous resource consent.
We do have three more, so the next one is Alpine Estate Limited, submission 450.
Yes, I had a question from Stephen on that. In your section for the survey report, in your conclusions, you talked about not rezoning this because it could lead to land banking. And I'm just wondering, given the council decisions on the recommendations will be released after the consent about the SHA will have lapsed, how can you our recommendations encourage land banking?
I guess I was thinking that if you go through the SHA process, you've got a limited time frame, and it's use it or lose it. They've got, you know, they've had a consent for more than the LDR enables there, and they should, you know, the whole purpose behind Hatcher is just to get on with it and enable some housing supply and, you know, potentially affordable housing as well. If they were successful in their rezoning request and went from LDR to HDR and had been, you know, maybe they haven't got on with their consent or whatever, time is going to be an interesting thing, but if they had changed their mind or there was a change of ownership or something or other and the SHA wasn't going ahead and they successfully got HDR, there'd be no incentive to do the SHA. So the whole point of that being that they've gone through this, you know, easier process to get on and get some housing supply and ideally smaller lots and smaller units to increase the affordability.
Isn't the construction started on that?
Yes, when I visited, which was quite a while ago now, that there was a bit going on and there was a little sort of site office where you could sort of, you know, look at the plans and things, but hopefully
that. We were at the site now, there seemed to be a lot more than that going on.
That's good, yeah, I haven't driven down and around that way for a while.
You might pay to check before you rebuttal answer, or you reply, so that you can update us on that.
Which is great, yeah, and that's, you know, and that's what should be happening, but I don't think they need to have a rezoning like that.
Well, this is the follow-up question I had, though, is that for yet the SHA seem to give effect to it. Well, I've got the consent. If they give effect to it and they have something denser, then they need to be neutral. Wouldn't it be appropriate to recognise that increased density in the zoning?
No, I don't think so.
You think that if anyone wants to redevelop any of those sites once they own them, they have to comply with the low density residential bulk location requirements?
Because the SHA is a specific purpose in a specific period in time, I don't think it needs to be at the, you know, that what you're enabling there needs to be reflected in the zoning.
But what about the future landowners when they want to do something to their property and everything breaches bulk location because it was the SHA?
Mm.
Shouldn't we actually make life easier for them?
I can see what you're saying from that perspective. I mean, they'll have an implemented consent to give them a consented baseline, at least, to go back to and say, well, you know, this level has been enabled and it was based on, I mean, I haven't looked at the details, unfortunately, of that consent, but I will do.
But you're already spending $2,000 on your resource consent application,
mm-hmm.
just to actually say that.
Mm.
And that's what I'm wondering, whether, in fact, if it's been given effect to, shouldn't it have a zoning so that future owners for the next 20-odd years don't have to get a resource consent for something which would be relatively minor in, say, the median density. So I don't know what will be the closest to extend their garage or their rather than coming in here for Meadowstone and Wanaka is the prime example of where everyone needs a consent to do anything because of a bad zoning decision in the Opera plan.
Yeah.
And I just don't want to create those sorts of circumstances.
And I do see what you're saying. So I think if the panel had confidence that EKHA was being implemented and that that they weren't going to be getting a zoning that they could just their heels back on, then yes, you would be preempting those future problems.
Well, then you can suggest when you apply evidence that you update us on where that's at. Presumably, it would have started talking about your recent monitoring reports in the council system that will tell us where they're at.
And I would be much more comfortable if it was at that point. When I was there, there was nothing there apart from the site office.
Right.
When you look at the piece of land next door, you're really invisible.
Yes.
Well,
Thank you. So, next submission, Daryl Sampson and Louise Cooper, 495.
I actually asked the questions on that.
Yes.
Everyone else has that. And the same with the dollar, my question was covered.
I just checked that one, didn't I? Remind myself of the rules.
No,
I have no
questions. Any questions? Just need to check. I just want to go to the store. Let's make my last question. I've done something wrong with my computer because I'm going to lose it in the battery in a minute. Sorry about that.
Which one were we on?
Mandela. Yes, 6:14.
Unless you have any further questions of her, we can either call Ms. Jones and ask her to read her summary before the lunch adjournment, or we could break 10 minutes early. Then you have the institute.
Here, Ms. Jones's summary. We'll probably finish that in 10 minutes.
Certainly.
And then we'll go straight to questions after lunch.
Certainly. I'll call Ms. Jones. Just while Ms. Jones sets up, I do have exhibit 1A to hand up to the panel. So Ms. Kimberly Banks spoke about this, I think on Wednesday of the first hearing week. It is a replacement of the map of Franklin Flats North,
right.
Which includes the North Coast.
Yes,
Coastal.
Yes, it includes the things that I asked for.
Yes, so if I can hand that up to record. Ms. Jones has filed a Section 42A report dated 24th of May and one statement of rebuttal evidence dated the 11th of July. You also, I understand, have her summary in front of you. Just before she starts to read that for you, I just remind you that Dr. Charles has filed evidence in relation to the submissions that Ms. Jones considers the summary of this evidence has also been filed.
Yes.
Thank you.
My evidence for the Queensland Lakes District Council relates to planning matters regarding rezoning requests in the Jacks Point area of the district. My evidence considers the submission from Wild Grass Partnerships, which relates to an area of land commonly known as Jacks Point Hill, which is wholly located within the notified Jacks Point zone, and the submission from Jardine Family Trust and Remarkable Station Limited, which relates to the Homestead Bay Park Jacks Point Zone and extending the Jacks Point Zone over the adjacent rural zone land. Given that the substance of the Wildgrass submission was fully considered in hearing stream 9, the summary focuses on the Jardine submission. In response to that part of the Jardine submission seeking that the Jacks Point Zone be extended by approximately 163 hectares, in the absence of sufficient evidence from Jardine in relation to wastewater disposal or the transportation effects of significantly increasing the development capacity of Homestead Bay, I consider that only a small extent of rezoning and only minor changes to the structure plan and provisions are appropriate. Therefore, the only changes to the structure plan and the Jacks Point Zone provisions that I have recommended are to A, expand the open space residential area within, and I'd just like to correct this, that should read 18 hectares. So,
four goes to 18.
Yeah. And 18 hectares beyond the notified Jacks Point Zone boundary, and to align the urban growth boundary with the slightly expanded Jacks Point Zone boundary. This results in deleting the farm buildings and craft activity area from the structure plan and all the provisions associated with that. B, amend policy 412128 relating to integrated infrastructure to provide clearer direction and to acknowledge that the establishment of new private schemes may be acceptable under particular circumstances. C, to replace part of the open space foreshore activity area with open space landscape activity area. To amend rule 41432 to make all buildings within the open space residential area a controlled activity, which will provide council with control over building design, landscaping, nature conservation values, the extent of native planting and natural hazards. E, to remove rule 41537, requiring that 50% of each site within the OSR be planted with native planting, and the consequence of the policy 412126 to ensure substantial native revegetation only of the gully within the OSF area, and to encourage rather than ensure native planting of the Homestead Bay open space activity areas. And F, to amend the outstanding natural landscape line to align with the open space residential activity area boundary, although I acknowledge that there is unlikely to be scope for this. The effect of these changes is to enable up to, and here's the other correction, the only other correction, 27 additional, and that's consistent with, that's the number that should appear everywhere. It's consistent with the appendix, which has the yields in it, and so on. So that and the 18 hectares doesn't substantially change the threat of what's, my recommendations, essentially they are simply in summary, the amendments will better achieve the relevant site-wide objectives 3221, 3241, 422, and 631 to 636, and zone-specific objective 4121. The amendments will also improve the alignment between the rules and the objectives and policies by enabling greater development capacity within the zone, and therefore enabling more efficient use of resources, while maintaining landscape and ecological values, and more effectively encouraging appropriately designed development and landscaping within the open space residential area. Comments on submitted rebuttal evidence. I consider the following rebuttal evidence for the JPROA, Mr. Carr, Mr. Ferguson, Mr. Gourmet, and Mr. Coburn, and for the NZTA, Mr. Sizemore and Mr. McHold. None of this evidence changes my recommendations as outlined above, or my overarching view that there is insufficient infrastructure and traffic evidence to support the large scale expansion and intensification of the Homestead Bay part of the Jacks Point zone as is sought by Jardine. However, if Jardine is able to demonstrate at the hearing that the expansion and intensification as sought can be serviced and traffic effects avoided or mitigated, then I would consider modifying the provisional recommendations outlined in my 42A report in the following manner. In terms of the various matters that Mr. Ferguson raises, the traffic trigger rule, in response to the rebuttal evidence of Mr. Carr and Mr. Ferguson, if intensification of the Homestead Bay area were to proceed, then I agree in principle that some form of trigger rule would be appropriate to ensure that the council can fully consider traffic or transportation effects once development exceeds 243 residential unit equivalents. The general approach was initially suggested by Mr. Bartlett in his evidence for Jardine. So just a minor matter, I know he suggests a trigger of 244 lots, which he understands to be the extended development enabled by the ODP. I prefer the figure of 243, which is consistent with the yield figures attached to my evidence summary for hearing stream 9. Specifically, I would recommend the addition of a new rule in both chapters 27, which is subdivision, and 41, which is point zone, which would trigger the need for either a full or restricted discretionary consent for development or subdivision, that where that resulted in a total of over 243 units or lots being approved within the Homestead Bay Village or Homestead Bay residential activity areas, with the discretion being in relation to traffic effects on the local road network and the adjacent state highway. Now, this next paragraph, I'm just going to read it slightly differently from how it's written here, because in some review it got a little confused by the logic. So if I can just read it as it should be. I prefer the approach I've outlined above to the option suggested by Mr. Carr in his rebuttal evidence. And that is, what he was suggesting was that either the efficiency of Horseshoe Road at full development capacity be a matter of discretion, or that any intensification of Homestead Bay be discretionary until such time as an additional form of access is developed. In my view, neither of those options enable a sufficiently comprehensive assessment of the options and their respective effects. I do not agree with Mr. Ferguson's opinion that there should be a mandatory notification of the owner of Jacks Point Road, of Narragat Road, for any increase in development in Homestead Bay or connected to Narragat Road, and understand that such a rule is permitted by the fire and that under Section 77D, councils can make a rule specifying the activities in respect of which applications must be notified or non-notified, but cannot specify the parties which notification is mandatory. The zoning and provisions for land containing the airstrip. In paragraph 34 of this rebuttal evidence, Mr. Ferguson opines that it would be more appropriate to retain the rural zone over the end zone in the airstrip. In the PDP, this airstrip is an informal airport and is controlled by Rule 21.526 of the Noise Chapter and Rule 26.512 of the Noise Chapter, and by Objective 21.211 and associated policies. As provisionally recommended in my Section 42A report, the airstrip landing would be included within the Jacks Point zone as an open space golf or OSG area. But Rule 41.15.2 would render it a non-compliant activity to undertake any activity beyond what is enabled by the existing resource consent. This is more onerous than the Rural Rule 21.5.26. This was not my intention, and in response to Mr. Ferguson's rebuttal evidence, if the Jacks Point zone is extended as sought by Jardine, then I would recommend that Rule 41.4.15.2, which is in the Jacks Point zone, be amended such that airport activity, aerodromes, or informal airports on this land are a discretionary activity, while all such activities elsewhere in the Jacks Point zone should remain non-compliant. Also, in response to the rebuttal evidence of Mr. Ferguson, if the Jacks Point zone is extended to include the existing airstrip and the land surrounding it, then I consider it would be appropriate to include specific policies to guide any further development or increased use of the airstrip. In my opinion, such policies should aim to enable the ongoing use of the airstrip while avoiding the adverse effects of aircraft noise on residential activities within the 55 dBA sound level contour, and protecting residential amenity from the adverse effects that can arise from informal airports. This would be achieved through Rule 41.5.1, which permits only recreation and or farming within the 55 dBA sound level contour, and by Rule 36.5.12, which imposes noise limits on fixed-wing craft. This approach would essentially retain the policy framework and activity status that would exist for the end zone airstrip in the rural zone, the notified PDP. Alternatively, from the perspective of managing the effects of the existing airstrip, I agree with Mr. Ferguson that the rural zone would also provide an appropriate policy and rule framework for the continued operation of the airstrip. However, on balance, if the surrounding land is rezoned as Jacks Point zone, as per my provisional recommendations, then I do not favour retaining the rural zoning over only the airstrip, as this would result in a relatively small parcel of rural zoned land surrounded on all four boundaries by the Jacks Point zone. As such, my preference is to include the airstrip within the Jacks Point zone and provide policy guidance as to what the limitations on its operations would be. Rules relating to a new water reservoir. In response to the above evidence of Mr. Ferguson, I disagree that a new rule is required to manage any potential landscape effects of a new reservoir if intensification and expansion of the Homestead Bay area proceeds. There are a number of reasons for this. Firstly, such a reservoir would be deemed to be a building under the definitions chapter of the PDP. And also, Rule 30.4.10 makes any building associated with the utility within an ONL or ONF greater or equal to 10 square metres in the area, that should be all less than 3 metres in height, a full discretionary activity. Finally, Rule 41.4.3. I'll need to find what that number should be, that actually should, because I don't think we've got quite that extensive. Finally, the rule to be confirmed makes any building other than recreation buildings a full discretionary activity in the OSG activity area, which is the category that ascribes to Jacks Point Hill in the structure plan. These rules, together with policies 41.2.1.1, 41.2.1.3, 41.2.1.9, 41.2.1.11, 32.6.2, 32.6.2.3, 32.7.1, 32.7.4, and 32.7.5 will effectively achieve objectives 41.2.1, 32.6, 32.7, and those are Chapter 6, which is the landscape chapter. I note that the single Jacks Point zone objective includes the protection of the outstanding natural landscape and the need to have regard for the visual energy values of the open space areas.
Thank you.